And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, it's Bathrobs Piers Broadsides, and it's December 2nd, 2004, with special guests James Ney, Steve Argue, and hopefully Brett. Stay with us.
Make it if you live on your guard. Well, it's all here before you know, leave it behind. Too bad if you ignore it or hide what you find. My, but I can't think, I haven't slept for days. I've been looking for my way out of this maze. Some might say it's just another phase, but my mind's eye sees fertile fields to graze. Part of the plan. Everybody knows there's a lot to be learned. If you want to keep growing, gotta keep being turned. Well, I can't think, I haven't slept for days. I've been looking for my way out of this maze. Some might say it's just another phase. My mind's eyes just fertile fields of gray. Open up your mind, don't limit your range. Time to realize you got a lot on the go. It'll never hurt you if you let it all show. Ah, but I can't think, I haven't slept for days.
Mark Levy from his 1981 album Rising Wind. You are tuned to Free Radio, or Freak Radio if you will, www.freakradio.org. We are streaming on the internet, and certain questionable pirates, certainly unconnected with anyone we know, are reportedly broadcasting us at 101.1 FM. For heaven's sake, I say turn it off immediately. Or you can call in at 427-3772 if you want to talk on the air. Or you can actually jump on the computer and go to the chat room at www.pagesincolor.com. I should be there shortly as I fuddle with my computer. And you can actually chat. You chat and I read your chat, and away we go. If you can't reach me on the phone, That's a way to get in for those who are unable to do that. And that can happen if someone else is on the phone, since we only have one phone line in. Anyway, it's a nice frosty show tonight. As you may remember, those of you who have been reading the Santa Cruz Urinal, or Sentinel, as some of us like to call it. Actually, that's what they call themselves. That's the local paper. The police found a body, according to the Monday Sentinel, at a bench near City Hall. They didn't identify the body until today's paper. In that paper, today's morning paper, they identified it as a man named Robert Wagner. And I'm looking around for that story. Here it is. It's today's story. It's on the front page. Cold spell will persist through weekend. Santa Cruz exposure victim identified. Story by the Sentinel staff. It's beginning to feel a lot like Christmas, they write, though some aren't celebrating. Cold, dry air pushed Wednesday morning temperatures in Santa Cruz County and around the state to freezing and below, forcing homeless people to seek shelter and putting growers on overtime to monitor and protect crops. The overnight cold temperatures are expected to last through Saturday morning. In Santa Cruz County, lows dipped below the freezing point Wednesday morning. La Silva Beach hit a low of 29 degrees, while it was 30 in Ben Lomond, and Corralitos 31 in Watsonville and Scotts Valley. Most other spots in the county had lows around 35. The mercury fell to 32 in Sacramento shortly before dawn, tying the 1929 low temperature set December 1st, according to the National Weather Service. In the high desert of North Los Angeles County, Lancaster was 15 degrees, two under the 1989 mark. Other records were 29 at Santa Maria and Santa Barbara County, 33 at Burbank and San Fernando Valley, and 41 at the Los Angeles International Airport, besting a 1948 record. Freeze warnings were posted overnight in the San Joaquin Valley, and frost warnings were common elsewhere. Meanwhile, a man whose body was found early Monday in the Santa Cruz City Hall complex was identified Wednesday as Robert Wagner, said Deputy Alan Burt of the County Sheriff Coroner's Office. Autopsy reports are pending, but Burt said it appears Wagner, 58, died of alcoholism and exposure. And actually, interestingly enough, when the story first came out as a one-paragraph story in the Monday paper 3 days before, it said exposure and alcoholism. So who knows what the major cause was. Wagner had been living as a transient but had siblings, including a brother who works as a police officer in San Jose, he said. Two overnight shelters operate in the winter season in Santa Cruz, the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program in area churches, and a program run out of the State National Guard Armory in the De La Vega Park area. Both require homeless people to meet an afternoon bus stop at the Homeless Services Center on Coral Street. The cold spell set in Sunday night. The chill damaged the crops of some strawberry workers. Then we go on to hear more about how it damaged the strawberry workers and caused some problems for the avocado growers, citrus tree problems. But nothing about the 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people outside. In the studio with me, I have sometime homeless gadfly, sometime pizza store owner, sometime ISSP shelter manager, sometime Santa Claus. This guy has done almost everything. He has been arrested 3 times on the job for the same citation and actually done community service who knows how many times. We've had him on the air before. James Ney, welcome to Free Radio.
Thank you, Robert. Hello, everybody.
Belly up to the mic there, James.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
There. A little better?
A little closer. Got to get closer.
Okay.
Say something.
Hello, hello, hello.
That's good. That's good. So, hello. James.
Go ahead.
No, you.
I was just going to say hello, everybody out there.
Indeed. So, you are indoors these days. In fact, you're working as a conductor on a local tourist train, right?
Yes, I am. I'm the conductor up at Roaring Camp, but actually, I'm no longer indoors.
So you're once more homeless outside, so to speak, or not homeless, but outside-ish?
Yeah, outside-ish, sleep in my truck.
Houseless.
So couch surf. Okay, a couple nights a week I occasionally get friends to let me sleep on their couch. But me and my son are mostly sleeping in our truck.
Uh-huh. Cool. I mean, cold.
Yeah, Barrett, let me tell you, it was cold the other night. Yes, indeedy.
At least
indeedy.
You have blankets. You know, if you're outside after 11 o'clock at night, according to our esteemed city council and their own law, it's illegal to cover up with bedding after 11 o'clock at night.
I know. What a ridiculous law. And really, if you look at the law, it appears it's only enforced against homeless people. I mean, if you're a nice couple down on the beach, necking or whatever, with a blanket, they'll say, excuse me, we're sorry, and go away. But if you're a homeless person, you're going to get that ticket.
Though I have seen middle-class people getting harassed, even those walking their dogs on the beach. We've had some people talking about the overreaction of the armed lifeguards and park rangers and state troopers who take very seriously the terrorist threat of a poodle off the leash on the Santa Cruz beaches.
Oh, and they are. I was down there the other day, and they're just snarly about it. They follow you around, and they stare at you, and they act like they don't even want dogs in this town.
You have actually a pooch of your own?
Oh, yeah. I got a beautiful little German Shepherd Rottweiler, biggest pacifist in town.
And you say that the police took a passing interest in your Rottweiler?
Yeah, the park guys.
Was it because that you didn't have a leash with you? Or?
Well, because actually he was kind of dragging the leash on the ground.
Oh.
Okay, because actually, technically, the law only says your dog must be on a leash. Nowhere in that ordinance does it say that leash must be in your hand.
Are you sure? Have you read the ordinance?
Yeah,
you
I read the ordinance, and it doesn't actually specifically specify, although morally and by the tune of the ordinance, you take it to mean that you're supposed to have it. But if you want to get technical about it, it doesn't actually say the leash must be in your hand.
We'll see what Judge Almquist does with you when you get dragged into court.
Yeah, I didn't get a ticket. As soon as I saw him, I immediately called him. He came right to me, you know, immediately, and I picked up the leash. But they kind of followed me around for a little bit to see if I'd do it again, I guess.
You know, you got to be careful. These recidivists sometimes slip into criminal patterns. So, you know, you got to keep an eye on people like you. Well, tonight, I just wanted to announce, and you've seen the flyer here that I've been kind of passing about, Robert Wagner, who was mentioned briefly in the Santa Cruz Sentinel story, somewhere between the avocados, the oranges, and the citrus fruit, was the man who froze to death, or who knows, maybe he quickly died of liver failure, but just exacerbated by the cold. We don't know because the autopsy isn't clear yet. And there's going to be a vigil tonight, starting at 8:15 from Borders Bookshop. We're going to be walking over to City Hall. You can join that vigil if you want. Sounds like we got a
caller out there, but please, everybody come out and join us. This man deserves a decent vigil.
Well, let's see what we got here. And Broadsides, that's the name of the show you're listening to now. Usually it records through an automatic computer distant from the studio, but because our stream is sometimes failing, that sometimes comes off. And, for example, the Thursday show a week ago was completely unintelligible. I think the first 5 minutes was recorded, and the rest of it was all lost. The Sunday show, 2 hours, was lost. So appreciate that, Leela.
Do you want me to call back in a few minutes?
Yeah, if you're up for it, or you can contact me later. But I want, while you're on the air, you have your own show, and that's on Saturday morning?
Yeah, well, Saturday evening. It's the second Saturday of the month, so the next show will be December 11th from 6 to 8 p.m. And we're called Jail the Oppressor, Free the Oppressed. And it's an anti-state, anti-police brutality, anti-prison torture show.
Well, you have the privilege of having created, I think, if not the longest, one of the longest conversational segment streams on the Indie Media website.
Yeah, I was pretty astonished. I just basically I wrote about, you know, being wrongfully arrested on October 29th, you know, and it made me so mad that it happened here in Santa Cruz that, you know, Indie Media allows us this outlet to just, you know, any person can express their views or any news that happens. So I just put it up, you know, told them, Indie Media and people, what happened. They put it on the main page of Indie Media, Santa Cruz, and I did not, you know, expect the reactions I got.
Yeah, you had police, people who represented themselves as police officers or friends of the police, writing in to sort of denounce you, criticize you, castigate you, question you. And you had defenders writing in, and you had people like myself encouraging people to talk about their own stories and so forth. And it went on for, I think, 86 separate posts, which is unusual. Usually you get 2 or 3 or 4 or 5, maybe 10 or 15, and rarely more than 20.
It really angered the pigs because, you know, I guess the pigs thought they could get away with they thought they could get away with just looking like, you know, they're progressive, they're, you know, easygoing people, when really in Santa Cruz they're not. you know, I don't believe they haven't killed as many people as, say, like the San Jose police, but they're still very repressive here. And now, they don't like people talking back to them, and that's what I did. So, you know, twice they wrongfully arrested me here, and, you know, it's just, I did not expect them to get that reaction from the pigs
now,
like that on indie media. Yeah,
you talked about two different, you know, two different episodes, one where you were jaywalking and had an
No,
I'm sorry. You were in a crosswalk.
In a crosswalk.
And the officer sort of said, I could give you a ticket for crossing in the crosswalk.
Because he didn't like my attitude because I smiled and waved at him when I was crossing the street.
Uh-huh. In a mocking way.
Yeah, I was mocking him, basically, but that's not illegal.
Right.
It's not.
Uh-huh.
And
no, I agree.
I was in a crosswalk. He's like, you want me to give you a ticket? There was no one behind him or nothing, you know, and I said, for what? And he said, for impeding traffic. Of course, you know, me, I had an attitude right back. I didn't think he could do anything.
But
I said, yeah, go ahead.
Did you defeat that ticket, or did you end up paying it, or what happened?
I'm still
challenging
in the process. They want to give me 30 days in jail.
30 days for resisting?
They're charging me for resisting arrest, assaulting an officer, and not yielding to the right of way.
So did you put this officer in the hospital?
No, I actually went to the hospital.
What happened?
Because he, like, came up from behind. I kept walking once, you know. He said that to me, you know, I was in the crosswalk. I kind of stopped and did a little sarcastic response back, and I said, yeah, go ahead. Kept walking, and then I was scared, okay, because he straight, you know, reversed and pulled up on Cedar Street, got out of his car, and came up behind me, grabbed me from behind, put me in a headlock, threw me face down on the ground, and then, you know, I was struggling, and I was screaming and yelling, you know, people came out of their house. Then all of a sudden two officers were on me, and I mean, I really think he got pleasure out of it, because when they were putting me, you know, in the car, I finally stopped resisting. They handcuffed me, like they were smiling, you know, shaking each other's hands. There was like five pigs.
What was the name of the officer who initiated this stop?
Alex Martin.
Officer Martin. Well, you know, in the studio with us is the distinguished and infamous Steve Argue, who has had his own contact with Officer Martin. Have you not, Steve?
Oh, yeah. Mr. Martin was a fine, upstanding representative of one of our finest in the community, as they say. He came up when I was doing a cop watch and shoved me for no reason, and then proceeded to arrest me. And I was accused of initiating a riot, but no riot actually happened. But I did go downtown, and I did have to go back to court facing charges of starting a riot because of Officer Martin, and those charges were dismissed. There was a tape recording of the whole incident, and because of the tape recording, that being played to the judge even before it went into any official proceedings in the courtroom.
Which judge?
I forgot now.
This is a police tape recording or your own tape recording?
It was actually Vinny Lombardo's tape recording.
Free Radio Santa Cruz broadcaster.
And because of that, the judge listened to that and threw the whole case out.
But unfortunately, Layla, you don't have such a recording, right?
No, I do. I was fortunate enough to have a friend crossing an adjacent crosswalk, coincidentally.
Mm-hmm.
So I was crossing on Laurel, going to the bakery to work. You know, I wasn't intending to break any laws. Just on my way, and he was crossing Cedar. And the pig even, like, cut in front of him when he was crossing in the crosswalk. Like, that's how psychotic he was. He was so ready to just take advantage of that moment. And, like, you know, I felt like he knew what he was doing. You know what I mean? He tried to frighten me, and he knew he could, like,
now you're
take his violence out on me.
You're a young woman in your 20s?
Yep. And I was wearing a dress. I was wearing a dress. So
right.
It was really gross.
Uh-huh. I would call you an attractive young woman in your 20s, if forgive me for saying
yeah,
so.
Yeah, I know, Robert.
And did, well, I don't know how relevant that is, but, I mean, could be the police officer may have, he probably might had no awareness of this whatsoever. Or maybe
you're not going to ask her what she's wearing.
I wasn't going to. Yeah, but you probably invited the whole thing, right, Layla?
No, sorry.
Okay, I was wearing, like, a dress above my knees.
Now, there you are.
Had, like,
Wait a minute. Did you have a Bible with you? If you didn't have a Bible with you, I don't think we can talk any further here, Layla.
But Martin, I remember one
Officer
thing about
Martin.
Him. He was the guy we were doing the cop watch for went off on Martin. And one of the things he said about Martin is, he says, "You're hellish short." You know, and Martin was sitting there standing all hard with his sunglasses.
Your hell is short?
No, you're hellish short.
You know,
he's like,
he's
like
a short fella.
He was standing like with his sunglasses, uh-huh. You know, and just like looking really tough.
Uh-huh.
And the guy's like, "You're hella short, though. You know, you're looking all tough, but you're hella short."
He's such a pig. You're
trying to look all hard behind those sunglasses. So the guy was like a homeless guy who was being harassed. It was like a weird thing where the police were wondering whether or not this check he had was real. And actually, it turned out it was. He had a very large sum of money in the form of a check in his pocket, and the police were checking it out because they were wondering why he had that amount of money, which was none of their business to begin with.
Right.
And so we're doing this cop watch.
Well, wait a minute, was he Jewish? Did they check that out?
It's like, can't these pigs just leave people alone? You know what I mean? They ruin community. They really do. And a lot of people are scared of the pigs. A lot of people hate the pigs.
Well, it's interesting. Tonight, Layla, there is a cop watch. I think cop watch is at the... No, actually, cop watch is happening in Watsonville tonight. I know...
It happened already, yeah?
Yeah, you went to Watsonville tonight?
No, but I heard about it.
What did you hear?
Well, there is an article in the Sentinel of really... I actually have it with me. It was kind of a really messed up article.
Well, what I'm saying is, yeah, I heard about that messed up article, too. But I know that Cop Watch had an additional training session or meeting that happened this afternoon. The reason I mention it is because normally Cop Watch shares a table with Huff down in front of Borders, which I want to remind people is going to be the kind of kickoff point for a vigil. That's what, when you called in, I was announcing that there was a vigil on the happening to kind of remember Robert Wagner, who actually none of us really, I don't actually know who Robert Wagner is, other than he's a poor,
he died.
I don't know if he's poor, I assume he's poor because he was homeless, a homeless man who froze to death and was while he was inebriated or alcoholism was somehow involved, but
that's
he exposed
her.
Anyway, it starts at 8:15. I want to get this out so that people know to come down to Soquel and Pacific. And normally... and this may actually happen. Tom Belote, who's the head of the Santa Cruz Cop Watch, is at the table, and he can kind of field calls. He has a cell phone. Marilyn Garrett, I apologize. He will take your calls if you want to call into the station. And also, you can hear this show being broadcast from Soquel and Pacific on a radio, which is sitting on that table. And you can also sign petitions at the table, which I encourage people to do, urging U.S. get out of Iraq, urging impeachment of Bush, urging ending the sleeping ban, medical marijuana distribution centers, and restoration of public space. All of these are petitions to the Santa Cruz City Council, in case people think, what are we doing, you know, useless petitions to George Bush, or maybe it's useless petitions to the Santa Cruz City Council. But anyway.
Exactly.
And Steve here is a man who's actually a council candidate at one time or another, a serious council candidate, unlike some of us.
And that was useful.
And, Well,
I'm being
anyway,
sarcastic against
so,
myself.
So, Leela, is there a court date coming up that we should know about if people want to be supportive? And
December 9th.
December 9th. In what court at what time?
I don't really know
Call in and let us know on my
Thank
show.
Thank you so much.
Sure. And remember that, who's your public defender?
Fox and Gallardo.
Always bring somebody in with you to talk with your public defender with you when you go in. That's my in my endless advice, even to as savvy a warrior as Steve Argue, with as distinguished a attorney as Ben Rice.
I'd really appreciate public support. You know what? I would also, like, my vision, I would love for people to get in front of the jail and just, like, protest it.
Protest.
I don't even think a lot of people know where the jail is in Santa Cruz.
Well, actually, we did that at one point when Steve was jailed, and he was being, you know, people were freezing in there at night. He was circulating petitions to get people more than one blanket. He'd been assaulted by one of the deputies. That was back when he was
more than one.
More than one.
But yeah.
Okay.
And I won a lawsuit on that too.
How much did you win? Do I get some, perhaps?
No, it wasn't very much. Uh-huh.
Let's do it again. Fuck the jail.
Yeah.
Good idea. My advice, though, is when you're talking to a public defender or an attorney, bring a supporter with you. And when the public defender or attorney says, wait a minute, you're going to compromise our confidentiality, you say, I waive confidentiality.
The problem, though, it's like Robert has a lot of good advice when it comes to dealing with attorneys, but one of the problems you come up against is the fact that there are so few attorneys that, I mean, it's like you need an attorney, but there's so few attorneys that are worth anything that it becomes difficult. You need at times to weigh decisions. I think it's important to fire attorneys when they aren't doing what you want them to do. But the difficult question that always comes up is, well, who am I going to get other than this person?
Right.
I remember after dealing with this situation, which is kind of a long story. I don't know if Robert wants me to go into the whole thing of what happened in 99, where I was convicted of assaulting a police officer, felony assault on a police officer.
In defense of a woman and her child at the
right.
Yugoslavia bombing protest, as I remember.
But on the issue of the legal question there, I had an attorney come forward who I think there was a big conflict of interest. I think that was the reason he came forward, most likely, who supposedly defended me in the case, but actually did more to sabotage me than defend me. And I went through that thinking, okay, well, this guy has a high reputation, and I found out that really he was not working with me, and I knew that. I kind of knew that through the course of the thing, and I really should have fired him much earlier on. And
but the question was, who do you get in his place?
Right, and that was the question in the back of my mind. But I remember there's a very famous political prisoner in the United States, Mumia Abu-Jamal, and people working on his
Free Mumia,
right on. And people working on his case asked me, people very close to Mumia asked me after because they backed me here in Santa Cruz, asked me, well, what kind of lessons do you think, what do you think is the most important lesson from this, you know, maybe for us? And I said, I think one of the most important lessons for people who, negative lessons in terms of something I did wrong, is looking at your lawyer, looking at your attorney, and be willing to get rid of them, and look at, and don't even look at who you're going to get next. If they're not defending you, if they're not on your side, get rid of them. And I was pretty happy to see them. I don't know if it was because of my case, actually. I shouldn't. But
the Leonard Wineglass thing.
They got rid of Leonard Wineglass not too long after that.
Mm-hmm.
And Leonard Wineglass did a number of things sabotaging Umia's case. And now they have people who are kind of like isolated left lawyers working on his case, most of them. But they're much better in terms of actually fighting for his case and his cause. They're not doing a number of the things Wineglass did, which included ignoring very important evidence that and not putting evidence forward that Mumia asked him to put, wanted him to put forward.
That's a key issue. I think the problem with, and
I have to go now, guys.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for calling in.
Putting the people's voice out there.
Sure, and call in closer to your court date. Maybe we can come and support you. That's an arraignment you're going to, or?
Pre-trial.
Okay, and remember, take somebody with you when you go see your attorney.
Thank you so much.
Alrighty. Bye-bye.
Okay, peace.
And you can call in at 427-3772 in the studio with me, Steve Argue and James Ney. James, are you feeling left out over there?
No, not at all. Not at all.
That's good, because I know
company.
You've also had, I mean, you've actually had to deal with an endless trail of arrests around an infraction.
Yeah.
Which is really, you've been arrested three times on the same infraction. It's amazing.
Yeah, got
dragged away
too.
From work three times at midnight while you were doing your job.
Yeah, 1 a.m. in the morning on a Saturday morning.
On three different occasions, am I accurate?
Each time, twice it was the same officer. Third time it was an officer who was there when one of the officers did it.
Sorry about that.
So they absolutely knew, especially the second and third time, they absolutely knew that this was a bogus warrant. They'd already arrested me on it and took me to jail. Come on, it's just a joke.
Yet, of course, you've been unable to get any kind of civil redress because that would require another attorney who would sue them. Now, Steve was lucky enough to be able to, or had enough energy and public support to get an attorney to at least get some kind of settlement. And I guess the Street Spirit case where you were dragged down by Grim Grip Garner, as I call him, the officer who tackled you in front of New Leaf in 1998 in November, and then again when you were assaulted in the jail. I guess the next year. So
I was assaulted. Actually, as part of that case, I was assaulted in jail after I was brought to jail.
But were you able to get any kind of compensation for that?
I didn't get any compensation. In fact, my attorney dropped that case. Supposedly, see, part of my complaint, and here's, even though my attorney I have a lot of respect for, I think she kind of believed the other side. Because they were able to produce a document where I had supposedly signed to get my phone call. And my thinking on it is they, in later arrests and other harassment that went on, they got a falsified document with my signature on it for my phone call, which made the whole argument in terms of my beating and being denied a phone call and everything that they did to me in jail after that false arrest for distributing literature, for selling newspapers on Pacific Avenue, which is a constitutionally protected right, they made it look like I wasn't telling the whole truth because supposedly they had a document where I signed that I had gotten my phone call, which I never was given, which was a major complaint.
This was you were held over the weekend, and then you were released without any charges after having been brutalized both on the sidewalk and in jail.
Right. I was held for 4 days or 3 days, whatever, you know, through the course of 4 days. And
this was the same case where I remember I went and did exactly the same thing you did. Went up and sold a newspaper on the
immediately
sidewalk
a few
in front
hours
of the same
afterwards.
Officer,
right.
And he refused to do anything whatsoever.
Right, yes. And he said, we have him on tape saying that his superiors told him that would be adding more fuel to the fire.
Adding more fuel to the fire.
And there was already a group of people out there that were upset about it. And we made a big issue about it afterwards through free radio, through other media. The UCSC press ran a very good article about what happened, and so it got a lot of publicity.
And Street Spirit, the newspaper you were actually selling when you were
Street
arrested.
Spirit, and as a result, I think the city government here was under a lot of pressure,
and indeed they have generally stopped harassing Street Spirit vendors at least downtown, though there has been some scattered harassment thereafter. But getting back, and I know you came into the studio for a different purpose. You are involved with SEIU. We're going to talk about that shortly. And James, you've been very patient. You're here to talk about something you saw at Elman Pacific, an assault, I guess, on November 5th or 6th or thereabouts. I just want to I want to emphasize this because it comes up so much. What people are, including the case of this fellow that you're going to be talking about. You're talking about a third case. There have been at least two cases of violence right after the election at Elman Pacific. One was the flag burning incident involving Mike, Tall Mike, where he burned a flag and was brought down to the ground, allegedly for refusing to sit down, even though he was engaging in peaceful, albeit colorful, but constitutionally protected protest, burning a flag. Burning a flag was not protected conduct until 1989, I just learned. Prior to 1989 in the Texas versus Johnson Supreme Court decision, it was illegal to burn the flag.
But in advanced liberal Santa Cruz, I guess it's not protected yet.
Well, they claimed that they were not arresting him for burning a flag. And let's admit, at least they didn't call out the fire department like they did with Jim Costner in 1994 when he burned the flag at the boardwalk. So at least they're advancing, and they don't have to, they don't feel it's a serious fire hazard. They simply engage in a little curbside justice when required. The issue to me that we kind of have touched on here, and it's an important one, is attorneys and how the hell can you deal with attorneys. I think I disagree with you, Steve, on your case around attorney Ben Rice, because that was your attorney in the case of the
And how do you disagree with me?
I disagree in the sense I don't know really. My knowledge is limited, but I don't know that he entered the case thinking, okay, I'm going to sabotage Steve's case.
You have a touching faith in the system.
It's not so much that,
Robert.
Let me say why I disagree first, and then okay. you can criticize me. I think attorneys are incredibly habitually, because of training, extremely arrogant. They tend to believe, not only do they know the law, and they do, because they spend some time studying it, no question about it, and they know how to research it, but they have the right to make all the relevant decisions in legal cases. It's like they say, well, we're the surgeon. We will adopt whatever procedures we want, and if you don't like it, you can fire us. But we're not going to take your advice. We're not going to confer with you. We don't feel it necessary to inform you even fully as to what we're doing. I mean, we can if we will, but we're in a hurry. It's the hallway. We only have 5 minutes to talk to you. You know, I mean, we're busy. We have 100 cases. You're one of them.
But that's a little different than, yeah, I've seen that attitude. Like we had both had an attorney that I think treated us that way.
Which attorney are you thinking of?
What was his name?
Tony Boal.
Tony Boal. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I think with Ben Rice it was different. I think there was arrogance. He seems pretty arrogant to me, but I think part of it was, I mean, he was consistently lying to me. He was telling me, "Yes, I'm going to call these witnesses." And then he at the last minute would say, "No, I'm not going to call them." And I don't think he had any intention of doing it anywhere along the line. Besides that, he's very close in with a lot of these people in the city government.
Mm-hmm.
I think and why, if he didn't support my case, which he made clear to me very close to the end, why did he volunteer to do my case for free as a high-paid attorney dealing with all kinds of cases? Why? Why would he do it? There was a friend from San Jose, who's a Puerto Rican activist and an activist for many rights in the United States, Curly Estramera, who laughed towards the end of this case, or at the end of this case, I think while we were waiting for the verdict or something, because of the horrible job that Ben Rice had done.
Yeah, I remember in the closing arguments of the jury, he argued that you were. What is he argued?
Let's not even get into that. But let me say what Curly Estramera said.
Even though you should acquit him. I mean, that was
right.
One of his arguments.
Curly Estramera was laughing. He said, "I just came up with an idea. Instead of trying to fight the fascists in the street, trying to fight the racists and all these people trying to do these things to us, we need to just go to law school, and when they get in trouble, we need to volunteer to defend them in the courts, and we'll get them all in prison right away, just like your attorney did to you." I mean, maybe I'm going too far. Maybe most attorneys are horrible and just assume that what the police say is true, assume that a lot of what the whole system is about is right. I think there's a lot of truth to that. With Ben Rice, I kind of think he went a little further than that. But even those other things that you get with most attorneys are not acceptable. You want an attorney that actually understands that the police are regularly, and most attorneys do know this. I mean, they have some understanding of what's going on. They're day in, day out, they're dealing with what this legal system is actually doing to human beings. They have some understanding about how the police lie on a regular basis, how people are brutalized by the police on a regular basis, and the things that regularly go on in this system. And the ones that deny that and just send you through the system like a piece of meat, going through a meat grinder and not caring what happens to you, you need to try to find someone who's actually committed to something different.
I agree. I think the thing is, attorneys view this as a complicated game where they know the arcane rules. And they have, you know, they have a sense of how far they can push the judge and what should be done and how the case should be presented and, you know, what kind of arguments will win and what won't win. They feel that they have this expert knowledge, which, who knows? I mean, they probably have more knowledge in some respects, certainly, than you and I have in terms of even of how where a particular judge's limits are. But I don't think that they have an understanding often of the political dimension.
No,
of
they don't.
What's going
they don't
on.
Often. They don't have an understanding of how the system works.
Right. Well, or also
they think it's who you know.
Right. But but also like that, what the objectives of political activists are. The objectives of political activists are not simply to win a legal case. In many cases, it is to bring public exposure to bear on an issue. Admittedly, the courts are often not the best way to do this because it's a limited forum and the issue
that's
gets
a form of oppression, really. The courts are like they're like a club against
right.
the people.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So I think that, you know, attorneys sort of feel like they're doing the best they can for you often, but the best they can involves often ignoring the way you want to proceed, ignoring the witnesses you want to introduce, ignoring the motions you think are important. And they'll say to you, well, you're not the surgeon. You're not the expert. You don't know what's going on. Of course, your response has to be, hey, I'm the person who's going to go to jail on this issue.
Right.
You know, and also I'm the person who's on trial here. You're
right.
And I'm the person who has hired you.
And
so
that was another issue with Ben Rice as towards the end, he's like saying, well, you need to plea bargain. Well, I can set up something, you know. And it's like, no. As soon as I admit guilt to something I'm not guilty for, I lose the whole political aspect of support and putting the onus on the system for putting me on trial. As soon as you agree to your oppression, you get a lot less support. You get a lot less understanding. And that is exactly what the system is going for.
Plus, it betrays other people in your situation.
Right.
Which is a key issue. James, have you ever had problems with attorneys that sound familiar here? Or are we bad mouthing, hard working?
Not in the slightest. In fact, they're not public defenders. They're public offenders. They're very offensive. I've sat in court many, many days and listened. Been there with my own, and I can tell you that very often, in fact, they won't even have a hearing with their client. They'll go in conference with the judge and the DA, and then they'll come back and they'll say, well, here's the deal. Take it, or else. I feel very much strongly that a large number of our public offenders or defenders,
or
call
pretenders.
Them, pretenders, that's another good word, are in absolute cahoots. They work for the system. They're paid by the system, and they do exactly what the system wants them to do. Screw you in the ass and throw a little sand in the Vaseline while they're doing it.
Well, as I said, I probably take what you two may regard as a naive view, and I tend to believe that in their own limited way, they feel that they're trying to do their job, which, as they see it, is within a limited and constricted series of rules in which they're operating, they will give a kind of defense of you.
I don't believe that's true very often with the public defenders. Now, we're not necessarily of lawyers you've hired or private attorneys. You may get a little better than that. They actually feel they're working for you. But the public defenders, and I've heard it said time after time, they don't work for you. They're paid for by the county. They're paid for by the state. They're paid for by the city. They feel that's their employer. Yes, sometimes they do a good job. If you appear to be a citizen, clean cut, whatever you want to call it. But very often, if you sit in there, you will see an absolute difference between the type of services received by someone who comes in well-dressed with a home and a job and that, and the services received by a poor person or a, more so a homeless person.
And you actually have been recently an observer. I know you went into
very often.
You went into the courtroom of our famous, the referee previously, I call it John Mulligan or Meat Grinder Mulligan, as they used to call him. And now it's Kim Baskin,
and
who you've been observing, and you had a number of pungent criticisms.
Yeah,
about,
I mean, I can't believe this woman is a judge. Well, she's not a judge.
She's a referee.
Right. But, I mean, I can't believe that she's allowed to display in a courtroom what she claims to be knowledge. And she lies, straight up. I've sat there. I've heard her.
Well, what does she lie about?
Well, a failure to appear. That's a misdemeanor. She will tell you in court, no, it's not. You don't have a right to an attorney. You don't have a right to a trial. And that she has the right to just fine you for it because it's a municipal offense. That is an absolute straight-up lie. Sat there one day and saw her do this to seven people. Seven people.
Interestingly enough, Mulligan used to do the same thing. And when I brought the issue to law librarian Pat Freemer, I guess her name is, and she ran for supervisor at one point 2 years ago, she agreed with me, and she agreed with you, that there is no such infraction in the city code or in the state code. It is, in fact, a misdemeanor if you want to charge someone with failure to appear. And you have to afford them, A, the option of a jury trial, and, B, the option of a public defender.
Absolutely correct.
And that Mulligan was regularly disregarding this right, which apparently this new
lady is also doing the exact same thing. In fact, I can tell you even more than that. I've got a case going there pretty ridiculous. I'm in San Lorenzo Park. I've laid out my blanket. I've laid a magazine down about 6 inches away from my blanket on the lawn. And I walk back over to the car that gave me a ride to the park. I'm having a picnic in the park with my family. And a few yards off from us is a group of kids sitting around each other, homeless kids, whatever, you know, hanging out in the San Lorenzo Park like they do every day.
Kids, you mean like 17, 18, 16?
17, 18 to maybe 20, you know. I mean, yeah. Our local young kids.
Rowdy,
homeless.
Drunken, scumbag, drug dealing type.
No, I'm there. I see around these kids all the time. I'm not saying some of them don't get drunk, but this was not a group of drunken bums. These were young kids. Most of them were very clean, very, very nice kids. I've spoken with them many times. Three officers came up on bicycles, which, by the way, it's a crime to ride a bicycle in the park.
Not if you're a police officer.
And it's even more of a crime, a moral crime, to ride those bicycles on that lawn. How dare they destroy our environment with their bicycles? But they're police officers, so they can do this. So they're circling these kids and harassing them. Now, I'm standing right there watching this. And this one officer is playing chicken with the children, what we call chicken. And what he does is he swerves his bike and rides really fast straight at them. And then at the last second, he swerves away, you know, like he's going to run over the kid. These are all sitting in a group. And he's going around the circle, swinging
that
out, swinging
like
back in, trying to run. Well, on one of his circles, he swings way out, and he runs over my brand new magazine. I said something. Should I not have? I said, excuse me, what is the matter with you? Why are you riding over my magazine? And in fact, actually, I said, what the F? I won't use that word here, but I said, what the F are
you
doing?
Wait a minute, this is free read. You mean what the foo-foo, right?
Okay, what the foo-foo are you doing? Well, but
don't say fuck on the air,
I absolutely shouldn't say what the fuck.
That's correct.
But that's what I said to him. What the fuck are you doing? Riding over my magazine. And he got in my face and told me, what do you think you're doing here? And I said, I'm having a picnic. Oh, no, excuse me, I apologize. First he said, that magazine can't be there. And I said, excuse me, I'm having a picnic. And he told me, you can't have a picnic in this park. And I said, excuse me, you must be out of your fucking mind. So this officer started to get nasty with me. So I told him, well, you know what? Why don't you just fucking give me a goddamn ticket for picnicking in the park right now? So he did.
Who was the officer?
Do you have it?
Oh, yeah, I have the ticket right here.
And
the officer is Tony Park, badge 101. I believe he's a lieutenant. Is that below a sergeant, or is that above a sergeant?
That's above a sergeant.
Okay, then he's probably a sergeant. He did have stripes on his arm.
Sergeant
so he's
Park,
he's
yeah.
something with stripes. So then he tells me, he says, well, because he saw me take this food out of this car that gave me a ride down there. Now, it's not my car. It did give me a ride to the park, but it's not my car. And the young gentleman whose car it was hooking up his stereo. So his stereo came on for about 30 seconds. You know, maybe a minute, if that. He says, oh, good, it works, and turns it off. It wasn't even on hard. I mean, you could barely hear it. You could hear the stereo across the street from the person's apartment 10 times louder. But then he tells me, oh, And I'm also giving you a ticket for loud music in the park. He was also going to give me a ticket for the registration on this vehicle.
Even though it wasn't your vehicle.
Even though it wasn't my vehicle. Uh-huh. And I told him so. And he said, so what? It's out of date. I can give you a ticket. But sorry to say, the owner of the vehicle was an idiot. The owner of the vehicle was actually my son, and he is an idiot. Because the idiot jumps up and tells the officer, oh, you can't give him that ticket. That's my car. And so the officer didn't actually write that. I really wanted him to put that on. I wanted a ticket for the registration on a vehicle I did not own.
So he gave you a ticket for picnic in the park. What was the actual charge?
It is...
And Steve, you have a comment to make.
9.50.020, conduct on public property.
That's the infamous ordinance that was used.
1048.010, loud music from car.
Right. Well, 9.50.020 is what they give you if you sit on one of the low-lying planter edges that surrounds trees in the, let's say, downtown on the mall. It's anything that they want. I got a ticket once for sitting on the Scribner's statue, monument in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz.
It took them 15 minutes from the start of looking in their little book. I timed them.
How many police?
Three. Uh-huh. And they searched through this book for 15 minutes before they actually came up with the number to write on the ticket. Okay, because they couldn't even figure out. They were citing me for having a picnic in the park, but it took them 15 minutes to find the ordinance. And
which reminds me of what the police said to me one time. Or actually, I think I saw them say this to a group of kids downtown that were saying we're doing nothing illegal. They said, this is Santa Cruz. We can find a law for anything.
And that's the truth. Or they'll make one up. Go to court for this. The judge, the referee isn't there. It's some attorney lady who's filling in for her.
This is in the basement of the county. By the way, I want to urge people, anyone who is charged with any of these infractions, please disqualify the referee. You go to the window and use it and get a pencil, 170.6 CCP, 170.6 CCP. You cite that number, 170.6 CCP, and you write a little note that says, I move to disqualify referee Baskin. I believe her to be prejudiced, and you put it into another court. Not that the Judge Almquist or Barton are particularly better in the long run, but they are, in their own way, supposed to and often do tend to deal more specifically with constitutional
I'm not a fan of either one of those gentlemen, but I will say they're much better than she is. I would much rather be in their court.
Well, they're less
of
a meat grinder.
Right.
They're more sort of the affectation and the the fluff and feather of being the judge that takes emotions further as far as, let's say, a jury trial. I mean, she's never done a jury trial, I would imagine, this referee.
Yeah,
in the
I don't basement. Believe so. Yeah. As I say, it was some lawyer lady who didn't even know what to do. She couldn't do every single case that came in front of her. She had to turn and speak to the lady next to her who is the
clerk.
The clerk, thank you. Yeah. Court clerk. And ask the court clerk, what is the number of this charge and what am I supposed... You can hear her. She's saying, what do I do? And then she says,
This is in Department 10 downstairs. This is Baskin's
Department
court.
Baskin's court, but it's not Baskin.
But
it's some lawyer.
It was a substitute for kind of a...
And as I say, she had no idea what she was doing. Every single case, she had to get the punishment from the clerk.
Right. Well.
Okay. Which is fine. Yeah. So I went in front of her and I pled not guilty and demanded a trial. And she didn't know what to do. So she says, okay, we'll set your first pretrial hearing for next week. No problem. That was great with me because I refused to waive time. Well, I came to court the next week and they...
Actually, what she should have done was she should have set trial for next week because that's the appropriate thing to do.
That was what she should have done, but that's all right. I went to court.
It should be said in this situation that when you're getting an infraction, which most municipal code violations are, you don't get a jury trial. You get a trial before a judge. You don't get a public defender. You don't get a pretrial. You just get, in essence, a week later, a hearing before that judge where they're supposed to show beyond a reasonable doubt that you're guilty
and
of
I'm
the
guilty.
Law
right.
that they accuse you of violating the law that they accuse
but,
you of violating.
But even more
Steve,
than that.
Steve has something he wants to say.
I remember Mulligan saying one time, to someone else in the
referee Mulligan,
referee meat grinder Mulligan, saying to someone in the courtroom there, you can plead not guilty, but if you plead not guilty, you're just going to go in front of a judge, or you're going to go most likely in front of me. I think he said that. in front of me.
And this
I remember. He says, and if you are disagreeing with what the police officer has to say, I'm going to believe the police officer, and I'm not going to believe you. So you're better off just pleading guilty now. But I can't tell you to plead guilty.
Indeed, he introduces his commentary for the police officer by saying, "Tell us the facts of the case."
Yeah,
that's how he habitually introduced the police officer's testimony. Go ahead.
So I did show up for Miss Bascom, and
I think it's either Basket or Baskin, but I'm not sure which.
Basket case. And then they tried to tell me that I wasn't even scheduled for hearing. So I got into a disagreement with the bailiff over this, stating that I was here the week before. He tried to tell me I wasn't here the week before.
Was it the same bailiff?
No. That's what I said. It was a different. It was the regular bailiff. That's what I said. That day there was a lawyer and a different bailiff than is normally down there, some young punk
cop.
Right,
so he wasn't lying or intentionally trying to cause you trouble. He just.
No, I'm saying at the second one.
He had no record.
He had, because he wasn't there.
Okay.
And he was saying there was no record. And I said, well, I was here and I'm supposed to start my trial. And he said, okay.
Or pretrial.
Or my pretrial, yeah. And I says, well, I actually probably said to him trial. I do believe I did say trial, for even though it was supposed to be a pretrial.
You had some kind of a hearing, supposedly.
And so he said, fine, go out to the window and tell the lady I sent you there. And tell her to find this case for us.
We should say that this is a window which people line up to do all kinds of things. And it usually the line could be as long as 15 or 20
people. This is 8 o'clock in the morning.
Waiting.
And people start lining up in that line as early as 7 o'clock in the morning, 7:15. I've gone there 7:15 and there were people in line already so that they would be first and be able to get in and out of this court. So these people have been waiting in this line for a long time. But I go up to the window just like he said, and of course the lady immediately goes off in my face telling me that she couldn't help me and that I would have to go to the end of the line and wait my turn, which court would damn near be over by the time that line went through. And I told her no, that the officers told me to come straight to her and that they need this done now. And we started to have a shouting match there in the hallway. So I said, the heck with this, and I went back into the court, and I told the officer, I said, look, you told me to go out there, and she just gave me nothing but guff and started yelling at me. And you need to take care of this. And the judge actually told him, go out there and take, because we were making a disturbance in the court. And so he did go out there to her, and he came back and he says, we'll take care of something here in just a minute. You just wait a few minutes here. So I waited a few minutes, and he came back out and said, oh, we found your case. Come on in. So I went in, and they put me in that little line. They line you up in chairs inside the railing there, and she keeps calling one at a time up there in front of her. My turn came. And I got up in front of her, and she had no idea what I was there for.
This is Referee Basket.
Referee Basket.
Baskin or Basket?
Baskin,
sure.
Basket. The lady judge. Baskin, fake judge. And so she says, well, I says, well, no, I says, I pled not guilty to this last week. She told me I had to fill out a not guilty form. I said I did it last week. And we went back and forth this way. She's telling me that I didn't have a hearing, that this was my first hearing. And I said, no, this is my second hearing, and my time is not waived, and you are not. I says, you want me to fill out another form? Then you will change that date on that form right now to last week.
It should be said that in any criminal case, if you don't waive time, you're entitled to trial within 45 days if you're out of custody, or 30 days if you're in custody.
Absolutely.
That's the point of not waiving time. If you want to be tried immediately, that's
what you're doing. Done, right. And so she finally agreed, and they did change the date on the form to the week before, to the not guilty form. And then I really threw her for a loop, because then as soon as she accepted my not guilty plea, I then said, well, I now move for discovery, and I want the police report immediately turned over to me. And she told me, well, there is no discovery in this court. We don't have a DA, so there's nothing I can do. What you have to do is you go out to the window, and you subpoena the police department for their records.
Wait, you should say, if that's the case, I want them to pay me a DA's salary, and then I would be happy to do that kind of work.
That would have been good to say. I wish I'd thought of it, but I didn't.
You don't need a DA, you need a city attorney, because in these cases you're talking about
municipal
code.
Court. So actually what you told me, although
DAs sometimes
correct.
Cover those cases out of courtesy.
But I did go to the window, and I did get those subpoena papers, and I did subpoena, and it turns out that even with subpoena papers in this city, which subpoena papers say that right on them, all information must be turned over immediately upon service. Says it right on the form. According to this court and Miss Baskin or Basket Case, whatever her name is. And according to her and the police department, they do not have to turn that information over to me until the day of the hearing. And that when I show up for the hearing, they'll give me that. But it turns out there really isn't any information anyway, because it turns out there is no police report. There's no DA. All there might be when I go to court is some scribbled notes on the back of the ticket.
Well, that's often the case with infraction tickets. Although in the case of Sergeant Baker, when he wrote me an infraction ticket for obstructing the sidewalk, he turned in a police report that I think was 15 pages long. but in fact, that may not be so far-fetched, because if you are subpoenaing evidence, provided they bring it to a hearing and don't require you to immediately go to trial, you can get a continuance and you can presumably look at that information they bring. But actually,
I have seen before, and I'm still researching this, so don't quote me as fact on this yet. When I do have the facts, I'll give you the facts. But the way I do understand it is that actually, if they were to actually show up at that hearing with information, with police reports, any kind of those types of documents, it appears that I can have all that excluded. Because under the law, they were required to give it to me when I served the subpoena. And anything not given to me at the time of service of the subpoena is not allowable in court.
Hmm. Steve?
Right. You have a right to discovery.
And you have a right to discovery before your trial, not on the day of trial. Because I have a right to not have that trial continued. I have a right to have my trial
Well, you have the right to have your trial within 45 days.
Except when a trial has been set.
No, they can postpone up to 45 days.
They could pass it off, but they're already at their limit. If they go a day past my trial date, we are out of time.
Well, then they should dismiss the case.
Yeah.
If that's the case.
My case is on its last, absolutely, because they put it clear in January.
I know you're entitled to discovery, but I'm not familiar with. I don't know if it's actually as you and Steve
they
are saying.
They should have dismissed the case before there was a case. But the part of what we're dealing with here is a whole system that's lined up against us. You know, it's like, you know, we work to try to get these like little ins and outs of how do we get them off our back through the courtrooms, but we shouldn't even be in the courtroom to begin with. It's because we're political, because we speak our minds, we speak up, that we wind up in these courtrooms, or because of how people look or how poor they are. And it's a whole disgusting situation, and it's one where there's a whole mentality pushed in the society that once you're there in front of that judge, once you have those handcuffs on you, once that cop is talking to you, you're already guilty, and you know a lot of people don't even want to hear the rest of the story, and it's a really sad thing, and it's a way they use to categorize people and people like us who are really speaking out for the rights of the people as troublemakers, as opposed to people who really have something worthwhile to say.
Yeah, what I really find offensive here. To be the only reason that I'm even pursuing any of this and wasting their time and actually wasting our tax dollars, because all of this does cost
money. Wasting your time is primary.
Yeah,
problem.
And wasting my time is that it's because of the officers' attitudes. Okay, in the city of Santa Cruz, we have officers like this one who believe that this is what they can do. He's riding a bicycle in the park, and he rides over a Citizen's brand new magazine. Now, if I rode over a Citizen's brand new magazine, you know what my first reaction would be? I would be off that bicycle and up in front of you saying, I am very, very sorry, sir. Did I hurt that in any way? And may I buy you a new magazine? Okay? But instead, this officer's attitude is, well, he just screwed up my magazine and he wrote over it. And now he's going to treat me like dirt and play the big, bad police officer that how dare you call me on this very offensive act of mine. And because you dared to call me on it, I'm going to arrest you or I'm going to give you a ticket. And that is the mentality of Santa Cruz police officers. Is that don't you dare speak back, just like the lady speaking earlier.
You're tuned to Freak Radio, www.freakradio.org. And you may be listening to us on the questionable illegal FM channel 101.1. In the studio with me, you've been listening to James Ney and Steve Argue. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathrobes Piers Broadsides. We're going to go until 8. at which point I hope you will all trundle on down to the Huff Cop Watch table at Soquel and Pacific, and hopefully well and warmly dressed, because it's getting cold out there, and help with a candlelight vigil to remember not just Robert Wagner, who froze to death Sunday, Monday, thereabouts, at City Hall, but other people outside who suffer under the sleeping ban, blanket ban, and camping bans in Santa Cruz. Those are laws that make it illegal for homeless people to engage in essential life-sustaining activity at night. Sleeping ban criminalizes sleeping after 11 o'clock at night. Blanket ban criminalizes covering up with a blanket after 11 o'clock at night. Camping ban criminalizes protecting yourself with a tent or some kind of or warming yourself with a fire in a campsite at night. Even though in Santa Cruz there are 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people, and we're talking the city, not the county, and only 160 spaces for them, place for 160 people a night, including the armory and the whole entire interfaith satellite shelter program. So we're going to go down to City Hall. We're going to have some hot soup between 10 and 11. Good soup. Joe Schultz is providing it.
Excellent soup.
And we're all going to freeze our asses off down there. And I'm not quite sure why, frankly, but we're going to be doing that. And we are encouraging you to join in this exercise.
Come out and join us. Show a little bit of compassion. If nothing else, come out and show that you give a damn about your town and the people who live here. Come out and say that this is not an acceptable way to perform our lives. God would care very much about this, and very much it's a thing that you should come out and show, that we no longer want a sleeping ban.
So, no doubt, this kind of leads into the second topic that brought me into this studio tonight, or that I kind of dragged Steve here for. Steve is involved, is a member of the SEIU Local 415, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct?
Yeah, I am. I'm on the executive board of the union.
SEI is Service Employees International Union.
Right.
Which covers what groups of people here in Santa Cruz?
It includes county workers, city workers, and IHSS workers. People working for the government in different capacities and through different levels.
No fire or police.
Is that without fire or police?
No fire or police, no.
And how many people does this cover in the county, would you say?
In the county, actually, I couldn't give you that number. My chapter, which is in-home support, is 1,200 people.
And what does in-home support actually mean?
It's people who do work assisting the elderly, the disabled, people who need help in order to live in their daily lives at home. We come into their homes and do all kinds of things in the capacity of helping them live their lives.
And what's the average wage of such a worker?
Well, we have one wage. We're all unionized. It's $9.50 an hour.
And do you get any kind of benefits?
People who work a certain number of hours do get health care benefits now. Mm-hmm. With our new union, our new contract. And unfortunately, that contract did drop a number of people off of health care benefits as well.
Now, I heard at the Santa Cruz City Council meeting a week ago Tuesday, where there were dozens, scores of SEIU members standing in line, packing the building, demanding that there be some serious negotiations before, I guess, the contract has twice been extended without the negotiations that the SEIU wanted. And on December 3rd, tomorrow,
at midnight,
contract expires again. Right. What? Give us some more details of what's at stake here.
Well, I don't know what happened in negotiations today, but I'm also a representative of our union in the Central Labor Council of the AFL-CIO for the Monterey Bay region. And at our meeting last night, we voted to authorize a strike, to sanction a strike for SEIU 415 members who are working for the city. What happened at the last minute is the city government called the SEIU office yesterday at the very last minute and said, we have suddenly freed up a whole lot of resources, and we're going to give you a real good deal on the. We're going to have it on the table tomorrow, the day before the strike is sanctioned for.
Today, in other words.
Right. And please call off doing any strike. Mm-hmm. So the response of the union has rightly been, okay, well, we'll see what you have on the table, but we're moving ahead. We're getting ready to do a strike. Mm-hmm. And so depending on what's happened today, potentially there's going to be a walkout.
So we have all tomorrow for that. That
right.
It's not midnight tonight. It's midnight
no,
tomorrow night.
Right. Did I say that right?
Midnight. Okay. No, you did. You said the right. You said it right. I'm just clarifying that. I know that as I go to the Indy Media website, I see you've written an article, SEIU Rank and File Revolt. Let's see what the public has to say here.
To accept the deal that has been offered by the city, which apparently was acceptable to the union negotiators that are negotiating the contract. And they will vote, I think, until Wednesday afternoon, until all the votes come in, and then they won't have an answer until Wednesday, I think, or maybe even after that. And so there will be no job actions until all the votes are in and counted up to that point, whether the employees agree with what's being offered remains to be seen, but that's the latest on the story.
Do we know what the offer is?
No. They won't talk specifics because it's still before their members. So uh-huh. I just spoke with Leslie Scanagata of the SEIU. She was the lead negotiator.
Uh-huh.
She did say, though, that their main issues, which are cost of living increase and the health care benefits, which are basically they're going to have huge, like next year they're going to have a huge premium that they're going to be paying the employees, and so that was the other big issue. She said that the two main issues were they were satisfied with what was being offered. So I don't know whether or not, but again, whether or not the workers agree to that remains to be seen. So that's what I know.
Well, it sounds like a crack report from a crack reporter.
Well, not cracked out,
but not a crack. Yes.
Anyway, thanks.
Hey, thank
Good
you.
Good luck.
All right. Thanks, Vinny. Then the next question will be if this is acceptable to the membership, and we've had numerous problems in our union of our leadership pushing things that really shouldn't be acceptable to the membership. But at times, if you don't have If the membership isn't organized to counter it, you wind up with bad deals from a union leadership that, in many ways, is working with the local city, county, and state officials of the Democrat Party more than they're even working with the membership. And
wait a minute, are you suggesting that Tony Madrigal, our new city council member, who's an SEIU member, who's I guess directly involved with these negotiations, is working with the Democratic Party in preference to the union members?
Oh, yeah. Well, IHSS is a section where he continues to be a hired guy through the union, not elected. Mm-hmm. The way we do things in our union is the elected people really don't have that much power and don't get any wages or a real position. The people who have the real power in the union are the ones who are appointed.
Sort of like the city manager, Dick Wilson, at the city level.
Right.
Who gets paid a huge salary, $160,000
right.
a year.
But even more so, I mean, on that level, you have a city council that could make other decisions officially. But here it's like the way it's set up, I mean, it would take some big changes in our union, which I do advocate, and I think it's going to take a lot to do. We have someone like Tony Madrigal, who right now we also have an elected union president of the IHSS section of our 1,200 members, Tim Ahern, who Tony Madrigal doesn't even want to work with, and Tim Ahern is someone who is speaking up for the membership.
And why doesn't Tony want to work with Tim, according to your analysis?
Because Tim is someone who didn't go along with what Tony Madrigal pushed for in the negotiations this year.
What was Tony pushing for?
He was pushing for us to ask for nothing.
To ask for nothing?
Ask for nothing in the negotiations.
And what, accept, you mean the what management had on the table? Or
to accept what the county had on the table, and which was nothing.
Well,
I mean, keeping everything the same, which is no cost of living increase, nothing in terms of anything moving forward for the membership, accepting the idea put forward that there's no funds and therefore we can't ask for anything, and making excuses for the county on that level. And in my opinion, Tony Madrigal has a conflict of interest. He's someone who viewed our membership as a stepping stone to his position into city council. He was licking the
boots,
the behinds.
For heaven's sake,
the
this
behinds,
is a family radio show.
The
you
behinds
know.
Of the Democrat Party people who run the county, mm-hmm. as part of licking the behinds of the Democrat Party, which was part of getting him elected here in the city. And you know, he says it right on his website. If you look at it, he says, "I had this position in the union, and now I'm taking my next logical step." And we were the stepping stone, the membership. We asked for more. We asked to ask for more in the negotiations, and there were a whole number of us pushing for it. But Tony Madrigal pushed the other direction. He got what he wanted. He got a contract which included things like no living wage, while he ran for city council saying that he'd fight for a living wage, that he was for a living wage. He wouldn't even fight for a living wage or even ask for a living wage for the union members that he was supposedly representing. So part of the site being set up is it's for members and other people, too, who are fed up, working people who are fed up with unions that say one thing and do another. That say they're there to protect and fight for the membership, when at the same time they're actually doing all kinds of backroom deals that really are not in the interest of the membership. And I think the way to counteract that is for the membership to get mad and to get organized, and the first step is to actually know what's going on and to know what the alternatives are. I mean, in terms of what's gone on in the county and their funds and their budget, they just put $2 million into De La Viega in a bond issue. Bond issue is a very, very high-cost way of funding anything. It costs a whole lot of money for the taxpayers. There's big revenues for those who invest in bonds, but it's not something that is a...
This
good
is the,
way to finance anything.
The De La Vega golf course. Well, don't you have any sympathy for golfers?
Well, that's not even the question. But yeah, I mean, no, I don't. I mean, I don't golf, and I don't really understand golf.
Miniature golf? What kind of American are you?
As someone who loves the environment and likes walking around in redwood forests and enjoys the environment, I don't understand that kind of butchery of our planet in order to putt a little white ball across a big green field that actually should be a redwood forest around here. So, but
I can see why you weren't elected to city council.
Is there a big golf?
There is. I mean, obviously, your reputation preceded you. I notice on the website you do talk about this, and you got some, you know, the Board of Supervisors decided to spend $2 million bond issue for De La Vega, and they claimed they could not pay more than $9.50 an hour for the in-home support workers, and the SEIU union officials made excuses for the local politicians, according to what you write, and you talk about billions of tax dollars, making a national parallel, have been spent to murder over 100,000 Iraqis in a war to rip off their oil resources instead of spending that money in health care, housing,
and
education.
And our
jobs.
Union spent $65 million, the SEIU did, in trying to get John Kerry elected. And John Kerry is someone who's for this war. Just think what $65 million could do towards in our union. It could It could go into our strike funds to make us stronger and able to be an actual force in fighting back. $65 million could go towards things like our own members' health care for members that don't have health care, paying for that. $65 million could go towards, if we're going to look at the issue of running people, could actually, instead of paying for a corporate politician with a pro-war, anti-union agenda like John Kerry, $65 million could have gone towards pushing our agenda to the fore. So but supporting John Kerry is what the union does on every level. It supports John Laird, who
previously mayor of Santa Cruz, now a representative,
right, in the state .
But he's a great supporter of gay rights.
Actually, he failed on that. He doesn't even come out for gay marriage. He's for civil unions and thinks that gay marriage is going too far. And when it comes to issues like workers' compensation, he voted for this big change that was made in workers' compensation. That really gutted the whole workers' compensation program this year. And, you know, here the SEIU is giving him all kinds of money for re-election. He's not even really opposed by anybody who had any chance of winning anyway, as if he was worth supporting in the first place. So it's like, you know, and then you go down to the county level. We've got these people in the county who are not even giving our own union members a living wage.
But surely Marty Wormhout, our supervisor, is one of your heroes.
No.
She's not?
No.
You mean she's not supporting the workers' rights at the county level?
You think she is?
I was actually kind of sounding you out. I know very little about Marty's labor record. Do you know more that I should?
Well, I know what the county is doing, and I haven't heard I haven't actually heard Marty's individual voice on it on this specifically. So I guess that's why I threw it back at you.
Yes. So Marty, please call in and give us your position if you're there.
But the county board of supervisors are. Who we negotiated with, really, with this latest contract, and they didn't want to give us a pay raise. They didn't want to give us health care, and they didn't want to give us, when a pay raise means a living wage, potentially, although, you know, we're a little ways from that. And of course, the whole discussion of some kind of pension plan, that was really out of the question. What they agreed to is workers who worked a certain amount of hours would get a one-year $50 towards that they could put towards their own retirement, and that was really pushed by Tony Madrigal in our last union meeting as this big victory. So after he gave this report on this great contract that we supposedly have, I said, well, in summary, we still make $9.50 an hour. We have no cost of living increase. Health care, we have to decide on who's not going to have health care or who is. And on the issue of a pension, we don't get it, but we get $50.
Yeah.
So that's what it is in summary. And Tony had to say, well, yeah, I guess.
Well, yeah, but Tony's an agreeable fellow. He would agree with that.
So what a lot of us in the union are fed up with is the fact that we have people who we are paying for every month with our dues that aren't representing us. And I think it's time for the membership to really get angry about this. And potentially we have the power. We have the power to put these city officials, these county officials, and all kinds of officials of the government in their place through our ability, looking here locally in what kind of industry we're in, if you can call it an industry service, I should say, what kind of service we're in. It's something that people support, people think needs to happen, something that people know needs to be funded. And what we need is a leadership that will go to the public and say, hey, these people who pretend to be progressives, these people who your union dues are going to, you know, really in terms of our membership, we're electing these people who pretend to be progressive are not giving us a living wage to take care of people who need these services. And we have all kinds of power in those terms, in terms of really putting the fire under their feet and fighting back.
How long have you been?
But we have a union leadership that's not willing to do that. And I think that there's a large number of members who are starting to speak up and need to speak up more.
How long have you been a member of the union?
2 years.
Has it changed in the last 2 years?
Well, yeah. There's a lot of members coming forward. I think 2 years ago, there weren't a whole lot of people in our section of the union even coming to meetings. And now, actually, at this last meeting, the person that Tony Madrigal had handpicked and had given a paid position in the union to be the head of the home care section was not elected by the membership, and someone who was speaking out against Tony Madrigal's positions was elected the president. So there's...
But Tony Madrigal was still in this paid position as he ran for city council in the last 2 months.
Right. He was still on paid leave, and the person running his campaign was Cliff Tillman, who is the paid staffer in charge of our whole union. The president of the entire union, 415, is Jeffrey Smedberg. But the way things are done in this union is really not very democratic. When you have people who are the elected people who are kind of in these positions of, okay, this is a staff and we're supposed to be able to direct the staff and what to do, but in more ways, the staff is working there full-time and really directing themselves and deciding who they're going to hire.
Sounds like the city council.
And what kind of things they're going to put forward. It's like the city council, but with the city council, I think you have a situation where you have a city council that uses that as an excuse, where the city council could actually make decisions and come to votes on things that would bring about different decisions.
Could the union do the same?
I think potentially. I think, yeah. But
it's provided for in the bylaws, right?
Bylaws are not. I mean, there's ways of people getting around anything. I mean, we're a group of people who, if you look at any kind of real union struggle big union struggles that have gone on in history, at times bylaws don't mean anything. When workers are on the move and you decide, okay, we're the union, all the bylaws in the world
do the bylaws prevent you from prevent the majority from taking power? Or, I mean, you certainly can go past the bylaws.
Well, the bylaws make it very difficult, let me put it that way. And I think a big part of it is going to be saying the rules that have been set in place. At first it takes people being more aware of what needs to be done and going forward in that direction. But I can't tell you specifically. I don't know all the ins and outs of the bylaws. But I can tell you that when people decide to move forward into action, there are ways of doing things.
We're
looking at ways of doing that, especially with Tim Ahern being elected, newly elected in the IHSS. And he's looking more closely at a lot of the bylaws than I have.
SEIU at the city council meeting was at the same city council meeting a week ago where we attempted to present for the second time some Huff members concerned with the war in Iraq and the vigil against two wars, as we call it, the war against the poor and the war against the Iraqi people. A resolution quite similar to the one Arcata presented and passed at the city council, at its own city council level, which essentially calls for immediate withdrawal of troops from Iraq. And the SEIU, as I understand it, both locally and at the state level, if not nationally, I don't know about nationally, has called for immediate withdrawal of troops from Iraq.
Yeah, but it's a funny thing, you know. It's like,
But they weren't interested. They weren't interested at this. The only person who signed that petition and who actually stood up for that as well as the abolition of the sleeping ban was Joe Enns.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure I'm pronouncing his name right. But other members were hostile. They didn't want to have anything to do with other issues. Who knows? I mean, it may have been a personality thing. I don't know. But
We have a problem with. I mean, there's different levels of what you were dealing with. But I think one of the foremost things is the question of having a union that takes very good. Starting with the first thing you were talking about, with a union that takes very good stands on certain issues, like end the war in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
We've taken a position on that. We've taken a position against the Colombian death squad government murdering and Coca-Cola murdering workers in Colombia.
Mm-hmm.
We've taken very good positions on against the sleeping ban here locally. But what does that mean when your union consistently endorses Democrats who have the opposite position? When you endorse someone on the federal level, John Kerry, and give him $65 million, that's for continuing the war in Iraq, and who voted for the war to begin with, when you have a position for ending the war. What does it mean when you have a position against the Colombian death squad government, when you endorse Sam Farr and you give Sam Farr all kinds of money? What does it mean when you have a position against the sleeping ban locally, when you endorse the local city council candidates that are for the sleeping ban and you give them all kinds of money? And besides giving them money, you give them your name and you give them that left cover, pretending that these people have something to do with an agenda that they have nothing to do with. When their agenda is about preserving this entire system that is oppressing people in the United States and going to war against the people of the world. That is what the agenda is if you're supporting either of the two corporate parties in power. And unfortunately, that is one of the biggest things unions do in this country. Probably the biggest thing they do is support the Democrat Party above and beyond anything else. That's where most of the money goes. Besides paying their own big salaries.
Wait a minute. Are you saying that Tony Madrigal, who during the campaign said that he was the only the council candidate other than myself and Coral Bruhn who said he was open to ending the sleeping ban, are you suggesting that Tony's not serious?
Well, when anybody says I'm open to something when they're running for a political office and he's aware of what's going on with things like that, like the sleeping ban. Anybody who that's a way of not answering the question. And no, he shouldn't be taken seriously when he says I'm open to it. He should be taken seriously when he says this is a crime and I'm opposed to it.
Well, I know that when it was raised at city council when he was being crowned, or after he'd been elected, I should say installed in office a week ago, I brought it up to him outside. I said, "What about it, Tony? How about the sleeping ban?" He said, "Don't be so turbo, Robert." And then when I said, "Well, what's your position?"
Turbo.
Yes. He said, "I've got to go to the bathroom." And he took off the bathroom. So maybe the solution is in the bathroom, or maybe it's being flushed down the toilet. I don't know what the answer is. You're tuned to Free Radio, Freak Radio in Santa Cruz. In the studio with me is Steve Argue and James Ney. And you can call in if you want. 427-3772 is the number. We're going to take our first and only, well, or maybe it's our second musical break to give everybody a chance to stretch and cough and choke and do the things they do when they're not on the air. But you can call in, 427-3772.
Movement, and there are no strings attached.
It's about 8:25 on November 23rd here in front of the City Council. Kind of a chilly evening. We have Valerie Christie playing a few songs as she sings next to a sign, New Council, Same Old Policies. And we have the ever-collegiate Ray in his headgear. Ray, what do you think of this current crop of council members that have just been inaugurated?
Meet the new boss, same as the old boss, and the people will be fooled again.
Oh, you cynic! You surely, Greg, you have a more upsky view of the strict.
Absolutely, I do. So, you basically judge people by what they do, not by what they say. And since I'm not really experienced in this process here, to that extent, as I observe it. Hear what was said versus what is done, at least insofar as my limited interaction with a couple of the new city council members, let's put it that way, then I should be able to see very well if in fact they're able to live up to what they say. Although the common wisdom says typically politicians do not. But I still like to personally...
Did you like Tony Madrigal's Spanish translation of his speech?
Yes, I did, as a matter of fact. I thought it was pretty good.
And Ray, how did you find that Spanish translation?
Well, I already told you, he's a potato, and he's going to kowtow to the interest on the bench. And there's nobody here that only speaks Spanish, so again, he's window dressing all the way. I will tell you now, mark my words, he's going to be a big disappointment for La Raza.
Now, wait a minute. By potato, you mean brown on the outside, white on the inside?
Yeah, I said potato. You said coconut. Same thing.
I've seen purple potatoes.
Well, think about that. So, did you witness the inauguration of the new mayor?
Not really. I was just outside.
And what brings you to this neck of the woods?
Just have my wife here.
And why is she here?
She knows one of the councilmen.
And who is that?
New council?
This is Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Okay.
Talking about Tony?
Yeah.
What do you think of the... What's your feeling about this?
I know nothing.
You're just kind of leaning against a post and relaxing.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Trying to bullshit with somebody who's trying to bullshit with me.
No. Trying to get a few opinions here.
I'm not involved.
Okay. Well, thank you. Mr. Crone, hold
it. I better go.
Now, Crone, what is this business about not having a beard? Are you trying to hide again?
John Laird just threw me out of the beard caucus. You know, he said you're banished now because all of us have beards. You know, how are you going to get in the caucus meeting?
How do you feel about the new mayor, Mayor Mike Rutkin?
Oh, I didn't hear it. I was out of the room. I didn't.
He is in fact the mayor. What is your sense of that?
My sense is that I think someone was quoted in the newspaper, possibly that he might be less long in speeches and more officiating.
Less long-winded?
I think he's a fair facilitator. He's a good facilitator. I like, Mike can do that.
You served on the council with Mike.
Yeah, yeah, I think he's...
You long for those old council days?
I long for this community to come together, and I think that some people think that polarization is a bad thing. I think it's healthy political discussion. I think people disagreeing, but not getting personal about it, is what we need to really practice.
Fuck on. You, Chris. I'm sorry.
Is what we really need to practice on in this community, and that's what everybody takes it really personal. And maybe it's an American political thing. Maybe it's a Santa Cruz thing. I'm not sure. But there's way too much personal stuff masquerading as public policy.
Now, do you expect any changes, like in the coastal conference hotel situation, for example? I know we've lost Rotkin, we've lost Kennedy and Primack. Is that likely to change the speed at which, should we say, Clearview Court residents are kind of moved along the way and the hotel goes up?
Yes.
Really? I mean, even though Kennedy and Primack are gone, it's going to proceed just as fast?
Oh, no, it's not going to proceed as fast. It's going to proceed... I thought you meant at a slower pace. It's going to definitely be at a slower pace.
Because this afternoon, the council voted unanimously, and that would mean there's five people who are still in the council who agree, to proceed with an $87,000 application for a grant for the Coastal Hotel.
Well, that is not necessarily saying it's a done deal. They want to line up money if and when they need it, and I'm not sure what that money's for. If they've done EIR work or if they've done preliminary work, that's what it could be for. I don't know if it's for to back the city's portion of whatever that hotel price
now,
is going to be.
Bruce Bratton has a column online, used to be in the Metro, which he suggested he was kind of hoping that Emily Riley would be elected mayor. Did you entertain any such secret hopes?
I think Emily would be fine as mayor, and I don't want to get in, again, the personality thing. I think that I would like to see there be a clear majority, and because there are issues, I would say 80% or 85% of the issues council members agree on, but the 15% that they don't agree on really become ideological and political and principled and become the sort of what this community is about and what people stand for, and I think that brings out the healthiest of debates a lot of times in this community.
Now, you were elected in 1998 on the heels of the Beach South of Laurel controversy. Where does that stand now?
Well, I think the boardwalk did not expand, although they went up, didn't they? They got their space ride. I wasn't in favor of that. They're not going to knock down the 11 houses they were going to knock down at that time. They were going to realign 3rd Street. That didn't happen. The convention hotel is something that some council members have been pursuing for a long time. I don't think it's going to be a very smooth ride for them. I think it's going to be a rocky road, but we'll see. Again, the community has to come out, and I think they'll be at a lot of times the community comes out at the last moment, and I believe they'll come out at the last moment on this one, too. And, we saw in this last election that there was a change on the council, and so people are not sleeping. You know, some of us like to think, people are just sleeping. Or no.
Sleeping is illegal in Santa Cruz. I want to remind you, Christopher.
Goodbye, Robert.
Hey, thank you very much. One last question. Tidelands issue. Is there any chance that that's going to go anywhere in this council?
It's up to the council members, but I tend to think that it's a long struggle, and unless they're in for, if they want to be in for a long struggle, which a couple of them would be up for it, I don't know if there's 4 votes for it.
Thanks.
But as well as I do, the Seaside Company has been using... There's no clear title to the 3rd Street parking lot.
What about your plan to fire Dick Wilson and John Barisoni? Will they implement that?
You're putting words in my mouth.
No way! I heard you say it just fine. No, actually, I'm just kidding around. Take care.
And that was former Mayor Chris Crone attending the festivities where Mike Motormouth Rotkin, also known as Riot Act Rotkin by those of us who know him too well, was inaugurated. We have a phone call.
All right, we're back. The DSL line has finally come back, and those of us who are listening to the stream and those of us who are listening in other places can now hear me once again. We've been basically off the air for the last 15 minutes due to DSL failure, and you know, if you're not connected to the internet, you're not connected to the internet. So, I'm Uncle Dennis. This is Freak Radio Santa Cruz, also known as Free Radio Santa Cruz. We're on the web at www.freakradio.org and in the air in various places around the country. All right, the show is called From the Cream to the Dregs, and we're going to start off with a little bit of Jimi Hendrix here on Freak Radio Santa Cruz and www.freakradio.org.
After all the jets are in the boxes, and the clowns have all gone to bed, you can hear happiness staggering on down the street, footprints dressed in